Midlands Today with O'Brien's Renault Mullingar. The all-new Renault Arkana, hybrid by nature. Call to O'Brien's Renault Lynn Road today. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. How are you? Did you get blown away? The sun is shining today. The dust is settling. Thank heavens. Coming up this morning, Gardaí prepared to make an arrest after the killing of psychic Stéphane Poissier in County Westmeath. Does anybody agree with the priest in Kerry and his outspoken remarks? If you do, well, I'd like to talk to you. 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You can text, you can WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. And, by the way, why? Under a fifth of people have lied on their CV or know somebody who has. Just how serious is it if you tell a little fib, a little white lie, when applying for a job? Now, let's see what's on the front pages this morning. I managed to make a mess here. You can probably hear me shuffling all the papers in the background. I would never be a juggler. On the front of the Irish Independent. Ah, lads. Copycats. Pure copycats. So you see cheeky chappies from Abbeyfeel in Limerick. All together in the nip. Having their coffee and playing their cards. And they're promoting their calendar. Their nude calendar. Yeah. Tullamore Lions Club. If you were near the Arts Centre last Friday, we did it first. Never mind all those who did it before that. We did it first. Anyway, main story on the Irish Independent. Airbnb clampdown delayed, it says, as raft of housing targets missed. So there had been, under the government's multi-billion euro housing plan, a promise to clamp down on the short letting through Airbnb, and a register of short-term and holiday properties being rented out was to be created. That has been delayed a further 5 months. When do you ever hear about the government's housing plan being achieved, targets being hit? It seems to be just a constant raft of negative. Anyway, you can expect more government ministers on the defensive over that today. The top story on the Irish Daily Star, Leo. I'm not going to hell for being gay. He is responding to Father Sean Sheehy in Kerry, who really doubled down on remarks that he had made during a homily on Sunday. He went on Radio Kerry, the local station, yesterday, and he dug a deeper hole for himself in the minds of many, many people and suggested that politicians who have advanced the liberalisation of marriage laws will be judged as well. However, Leo Varadkar, in a statement last night, quoting the Bible, suggested that he who casts the first stone is judged. Anyway, the next story is in the Irish Times, and you see a stunning picture of a pier. Where is this? It is Finnet Bridge in Kerry during the storm, and the waves and the might of the water just lashing up. And there's a car, a little one, looks like a Isuzu, just minding its own business, travelling along, and suddenly a surge of water, the wild Atlantic Ocean, hits it. And anyway, the drama there, a sign of the times, as temperatures in Europe rise at more than twice the global average. That's the finding of a new report by the World Meteorological Organization. And it describes how exceptional heat, wildfires, floods, and other climate change impacts are going to impact society, economies and ecosystems around Europe more so than other parts of the world for some reason. The temperature has climbed here more than twice the global average over the last 30 years. We shall explore that in some more detail later with Professor John Sweeney from Maynooth University. How well do you sleep at night? Because a new study suggests people who suffer from poor sleep are more likely to develop glaucoma in later life. Now, glaucoma is, unfortunately, a reasonably common eye condition. It is correctable, but it's not pleasant. So these researchers recommend that if you have difficulty sleeping, you should be offered a sleep intervention. What the hell is a sleep intervention? Do they mean sleeping tablets? Do they mean some of this CBT, this cognitive behavioural therapy, or the relaxing music? I was talking to Brian Clunan yesterday, our DIY guy. He has the opposite problem to me. It can take me a while to nod off at night, whereas he wakes up at some unholy hour of the morning and can't get back to sleep. Are you in one of those camps or the other? And what sort of suggestions do you come up with? You don't want to develop glaucoma anyway. But that's just one side effect. Poor sleep is generally linked with poor recovery. If you're a sports person and you're trying to develop your muscles, they don't get a chance to relax and to build and regenerate. And poor sleep is linked with more serious conditions too if it's prolonged over time. But what to do about it? That's the big challenge. In the United States now, they're gearing up for the midterm elections. A verdict on Joe Biden's presidency shall be delivered, and also whether people wish to return to the days of Donald Trump. Mr. Biden, in an address last night, called on the electorate to reject Donald Trump and his big lie denying his 2020 defeat that has fueled political extremism and violence, he says. And he drew a connection, by the way, between, and you may have heard of this, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who is second in line to the president, really powerful position to hold. Her Californian residence was entered by a man with a hammer. "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" he was demanding to know, and he ended up attacking Paul Pelosi, her husband, who's in his 80s, by the way. And Mr. Biden drew the connection to the storming of Congress and the Capitol building and said, well, people then were chanting, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" So he's pointing the finger back at Donald Trump, and I'm sure Donald Trump will retort in his usual way. Now, if you are a frequent visitor to the Aviva, give me your opinion on this. The IRFU wants to balance the right of somebody who doesn't want to stand up constantly to allow others go to the bar with the right of somebody who wants to go to the game and enjoy a drink. So there was one example of a man in his 80s who reckoned he stood up 73 times during a game so that punters could move through the aisle, make their way to the bar, and then come back again. Should they, for instance, have no drinking sections? Or is there an easy solution to this? Is there just an acceptance that if you're going, some people will want to have a drink and that's that? Anyway, they're doing a survey and they are encouraging the various rugby clubs around the country to engage in this and to politely message people going to the game to be respectful of fellow patrons. Anyway, that's in the Irish Times if you want to read more about it. A little bit of mixed news on the economy. It tends to be all doom and gloom, and certainly on the surface, IBEC, the business group, their new forecast suggests weaker growth next year, but still growth, 3% instead of 4% in gross domestic product. And there may be some instability on the financial markets. I mean, that's a leap in the dark, isn't it? Who would have saw that coming? Wow. However, even though household income, disposable income is falling, and they're already seeing retail sales down 3% in August, which is the most recent month for which figures are available, they also point out that in Ireland, we are a small open economy and we are still getting a huge amount of foreign direct investment. We have a record tax take, and we're in a far better position than many other countries. I mean, just look at our nearest neighbour, the UK, a 50 billion hole in the books. How do they balance that? We don't have that. Thank God, touch wood. Long live the foreign direct investment, eh? In more international news, a lot of international news today for some reason. Anyway, thejournal.ie brings you up to date on Brazil, where the election was won not by the outgoing president Jair Bolsonaro, but by a new left wing under a man named Lula, Luis Inácio Lula da Silva. And truckers were among those very unhappy, and they had rallied in front of army bases and tried to block highways. And anyway, Mr. Bolsonaro was silent after his defeat on Sunday, but finally came out yesterday to say, unblock the roads. It does not seem to be part of a legitimate demonstration, in his opinion, and he would like his supporters to stand down on that. So the question was whether he would do a Donald Trump and not accept the outcome of the election. It appears that he is, in fact, saying, I was defeated. Some other stories very, very quickly. Again, excuse me, a little bit of good news. Insurance prices have been crippling for, well, the best part of 10 years, really. And there has been a lot of work done recently to reduce the amount paid out whenever there is a compensation claim. And according to the Personal Injuries Assessment Board, the average value of compensation awards is down 38% since new guidelines were introduced last year. Now, what you need to watch is whether those savings are passed on to you when you renew your policy, or whether they just add to the bottom line of the insurance companies. Have you noticed a reduction, and a genuine reduction, not just a little token gesture? Has there been a meaningful decrease in the cost of your insurance? Yes or no? And please do tell me. One more. Autism. And I want to say hello to everybody in Laois Offaly Families for Autism, who have been flying the flag for must be 20 years or more at this stage to draw attention to the lack of autism services in the Midlands in particular relative to other parts of the country. But today, next Tuesday, a 12-year-old schoolgirl is going to bring her campaign to the Dáil. She is Carma Dermody from Ardfinnan in Tipperary. And she is going to tell the Dáil that autism services are a national disgrace. She believes what's going on at the moment needs to be addressed by each and every member of the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Autism, which is chaired, by the way, by a man from the Midlands, Micheál Carrigy from Longford. And she, for instance, will describe the violence of her brother constantly hitting himself. Such is his level of frustration, and such is the lack of intervention to help him. And her dad, Mark, says a lot of promises to tackle the problem were made by Micheál Martin when he met Cara at the end of July, but those promises have not yet been delivered. So watch that space next Tuesday, and if you are somebody who has walked in her shoes, or indeed Mark's shoes, her dad, give her your support, give her your encouragement, because for a 12-year-old to go in and sit before a Joint Oireachtas Committee must be very daunting indeed. So hats off to her. 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. Get involved today, because we have a stunning prize, well, particularly for the ladies. And, you know, gents, this could really get you brownie points as well. Goods.ie, they're based in Kilkenny, and they have an award-winning lingerie department, one of the largest in the country, and well worth the drive. So we've a selection of prizes culminating in an end-of-week prize tomorrow. So whatever topic is grinding your gears, or indeed if there's something we should be talking about and we're not talking about it, you can text either 083 30 10 103. A little later, why temperatures in Europe are rising at twice the global average. You would think it would be reasonably evenly distributed, but no, Europe is getting hotter than just about anywhere else. And next, the chief suspect in the murder of Stéphane Poissier in County Westmeath still hasn't been arrested. What's going on? Now, let's get you up to date on developments in the case of Stéphane Poitier, who was found dead in County Westmeath in suspicious circumstances, and indeed Gorthy have been investigating since and have identified a chief suspect. There's some development in the Irish Independent this morning from the pen of Ken Foy. Sinead Hubble is here. Good morning.
Good morning, Will.
So what are they reporting?
So we know that there's a chief suspect in the investigation, but he's not been arrested yet or interviewed by Gardaí. But it's expected that an arrest will happen sooner rather than later. And according to reports, the 65-year-old may have been in fear of his killer due to his erratic behaviour in the days before his murder. It's believed that Stéphane had expressed concerns for his welfare to some people known to him.
Right. Right. So he was uneasy himself then.
Mm.
Just as people may recall, the suspect was found in unusual circumstances.
Yeah, Gardaí last week identified a person of interest and they tracked him down to the southeast, and he was found hiding under a duvet as he cowered in the bedroom of a woman related to him. Now, as we said, he hasn't been arrested in connection to the death of Stéphane yet, but he was remanded in custody on Wednesday of last week in relation to an outstanding bench warrant. And the man in his 20s appeared in court on Tuesday, and that was in relation to threats, and he's been further remanded in custody to Cloverhill Prison.
Okay, so on separate issues rather than the death of Stéphane Poitier. The Gardaí investigation then, what progress is being made there?
So as we know at this stage, Gardaí launched the investigation last week after the body of Stéphane was found in unexplained circumstances, and a post-mortem was carried out at the Midlands Regional Hospital in Mullingar. Gardaí said that they're not looking for anyone else in connection with his death and are working on the theory that the suspect snapped after getting into a row with the victim. Now, the victim was violently assaulted and he was found under a cover, and there was an attempt to bury his body in the garden of his home.
Yeah, he'd been living there for 20-odd years, was very well known as a psychic, and we heard from many people last week how he wouldn't do any harm to anybody, and the area is still reeling as a result of this. So, look, we'll keep monitoring developments. Again, that extra detail coming from Ken Foy in the Irish Independent this morning. Sinead, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Now, the other story on the front pages, and is generating a lot of comment, and so far, not very supportive comment towards the priest. In Kerry, Father Sean Sheehy was deputising in Listowel and delivered a homily describing same-sex relationships and transgenderism as mortal sins. And he suggested as well in an interview on Radio Kerry yesterday, he doubled down on his comments, that politicians would absolutely go to hell if they do not attend to their sin and seek forgiveness. These being gay politicians are those who would liberalise the laws in that area. So that was a direct reference, and Leo Varadkar certainly took it as a direct reference to him. So the Taoiseach, in a statement, says he respects Father Sheehy's right to express his religious beliefs freely. He does not believe that gay people will go to hell for being who they are, nor does he believe that any man or woman can make such a judgment. He quotes Pope Francis, "Who are we to judge?" and then says, "As the Bible dictates, judge not lest you be judged. We are all God's children." And there are many other politicians lending their support to Mr. Varadkar in condemning the priest. Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney says the priest should apologise for the comments. They are disgraceful, and they are more a reflection on the person making the comments than on anybody else. Well, what do other priests have to say about this? Are they going to openly condemn this? Are they going to support it quietly? What's their view? Anyway, we'll be back on this after 10, and a chance for you to have your say as well. Because as I've said many times, every single comment, whether it's positive, whether it's critical, whatever you wish to say, puts you in the draw for Caller of the Week and some great prizes thanks to Goods of Kilkenny, goods.ie. Next, a mild autumn so far. Thank heavens, given the price of heating and fuel and energy in general. But it is linked to climate change. The World Meteorological Organization says Europe is heating up faster than anywhere else on the planet. Cane fall. There are two weather-related stories in the news today. The first you might like and the second not so much. The sunny southeast is definitely living up to its reputation, because Johnstown in County Wexford recorded the highest average sunshine last year, 162.8 hours per month, just in case you're curious. And the location with the least amount of sunshine, Malin Head in County Donegal, 117 hours per month. There's quite a difference there, 162 in Wexford, 117 in Donegal. Anyway, if that comes up on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you can split the check with me. The second story, though, altogether more serious, and it's from the World Meteorological Organization. And Professor John Sweeney is here, Emeritus Professor from Maynooth University. John, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
What is this telling us?
Well, the WMO often come out with a key statement just before the COP meeting takes place. And this year they're highlighting the fact that Europe has been warming over the past three decades twice as quickly as the global average. So while the global average has gone up compared to pre-industrial terms by about 1.1 degree, then Europe has been going faster than that. Now, it's not really too much of a surprise, because Europe has, especially in the high latitude parts of Europe, a great deal of snow and ice, much of Norway, Finland, Sweden, in the high Arctic, even parts of European Russia. They've been melting a lot of snow and ice and replacing some of that with darker coloured surfaces. And so that's been absorbing more heat. So it's not too surprising that Europe is warming. But of course, as well as that, we've had the Mediterranean undergoing drying out periods and greater episodes of sunshine. If you think back to the last few weeks, for example, we've had temperatures of over 30 in Spain. We've had temperatures of around 35 in southern Spain, and really warm weather throughout much of Europe. So Europe has been warming. It's been warming quicker than the global average. It's also a land-based country, a land-based continent for the most part. And that is something that also encourages warming, because the oceans, which give half, if you like, of the global average, they absorb heat more easily and dissipate it down to great depth, whereas the land, it builds up more close to the surface. So interiors of continents like Europe and Asia, North America, they tend to warm a lot more and a lot quicker than the global average as a whole. It's nothing to do, I think one might say, it's nothing to do with the fact that Europe emits more CO2 than some of those other areas, because greenhouse gases are dispersed very widely in the atmosphere globally. So it's not really a reflection of what we do individually as a continent. It's simply a reflection of the geography of Europe itself vis-a-vis the rest of the world. But it's a wake-up call for us. Of course, it tells us that when we talk about 1.5 degrees and 2 degrees of global warming, well, we're talking for Europe at maybe 3 or 4 degrees of warming. And that is something that should make us sit up and pay attention, because that is something which will affect us in many areas.
Yes, I was reading in France, they were 4 degrees above the October average temperature for, I think, 9 days in the month. It was for a significant block of the month. Spain, many parts of it at the moment, having temperatures in the mid-30s, which, again, very unseasonably mild. Is there any good news in the report? Is there any credit for some of the efforts being made so far?
Well, I think, you know, there's a glimmer of optimism this year in that the rate of increase in global greenhouse gas emissions has slowed a little. It's still increasing, and it's not going down by the 45% that we need it to have gone down by the end of the decade. But it is sort of, if you like, beginning to plateau a little. And that's a wee bit encouraging, largely due to the world adopting renewable energy sources, renewable energy for transport in some degree. So that's really quite positive. But, you know, overall, the bad news is, of course, which have pledged under the Glasgow Agreement of last year's COP, for example, to make stricter pledges, have not come through with the goods by and large. And that's something that will be addressed at the COP, I think, very much. In terms of Ireland, I mean, there's one interesting, it's not from the report, but just looking at Mullingar, for example, this morning, warmth brings rain to Ireland, unfortunately, at this time of the year, as we know from the past month. And we had an awful lot of rain in October and indeed in September. So looking at Mullingar in particular, you had more rain in October than you had in June, July and August combined. So wow. it was a wet month, as we all know, only to our cost.
Well, I think if you drive around the Midlands, you can see many fields underwater, and particularly in the Shannon Callows area. And sometimes that raises a degree of scepticism about climate change, that many of these areas have flooded historically. They continue to flood, and then there's some doubt as to whether any of this is new.
Well, I mean, we know it was a fairly dry spring and summer, so the ground was absorbing the moisture, and indeed the rains in September were quite welcome from a water supply point of view for the towns and cities of Ireland. But I think what we've been seeing over the past few years has been an increase in rainfall. We've got about a 5 to 8% increase in rainfall overall in Ireland, and we know that the periods during which we get really heavy downpours are increasing in frequency. So, if you like, the hazard of heavy rainfall is increasing. And when we get waterlogged soils and that kind of really intense rainfall event, that's when the risk of flooding really mushrooms in many parts of the country.
A few listeners are picking up on a remark you made earlier that the greenhouse gas emissions in Europe may not be contributing to this direct rise, in that it could be from another part of the planet where the emissions are coming from, but the thawing effect is concentrated more so in Europe. Do we know if each individual country is pulling its weight, or are some laggards still out there while we're trying to be the best in class?
Indeed, it's true to say that we have a good record of what countries emit now, because they are obliged to report every year to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change what their emissions were, what their emission inventory was, and where it was coming from. So that there is a record by country. And of course, that's important when you start comparing what they do with what they have pledged to do. And yes, there are laggards, that there are countries, including places like Ireland, which have not achieved the pledges that they made, even in the context of the European Union, over the past 20 years. So, yes, I mean, we can't point the finger elsewhere, I'm afraid, if we're not delivering the goods ourselves. Now, we have plans and we have laws, but unfortunately, like many countries, the implementation of those plans and laws is not delivering the goods. And that's something that is of concern, because countries under the Paris Agreement are supposed to come back every 5 years with new pledges which have ratcheted up their ambition, which have made their ambition to reduce higher. And the fact that this is not happening for the COP in Egypt next week, I think only about 25 or 30 out of the 200 countries have actually delivered updated nationally determined contributions, as they're called, or pledges. That's of some concern, because in many cases, of course, countries are having other priorities at the moment other than climate, and they're not simply devoting their attention as much as many people would like to playing their part in the international effort. If you think of what's going on around the world today, there are geopolitical issues. There is currently a breakdown in climate cooperation between the two largest emitters, China and the United States. There are issues in terms of what Russia is doing. And of course, conflict itself, war, creates a great deal of greenhouse gas emissions and a great deal of imposition on the atmosphere too. So that's the background to what we're going to see in Egypt over the next couple of weeks. And I don't think we can be too optimistic, to be quite frank, that this particular COP is going to change direction on the radical scale that the IPCC deemed necessary, because it looks like our 1.5 degree threshold is now unattainable. We're not going to be able to avoid 1.5 degrees of warming. And indeed, we may in the next 3 to 5 years exceed that 1.5, at least for 1 year, may go back down again. But it looks as if we're on the wrong track and we're heading in the wrong direction, including Ireland.
Professor John Sweeney, thank you very much for your time, as always.
Thank you.
Now, if money is getting you down, money matters, finance matters. Tullamore Credit Union are here with their expert advice a little later. And, well, feel free to ask a question. See what sort of options we can come up with if there's a dilemma that you're in. And a listener in Clara has already sent one in. Thank you. We'll put that on the list and shall tackle it in a little over an hour's time. Also today, the priest in Kerry creating quite a lot of comment. And I've a message from Duncan, firmly tongue-in-cheek. The Kerry priest's next homily will be about the denial of global warming, that it is God's way of showing his displeasure at all this transgenderism, tree-hugging, all this green stuff. Remember his intervention in Sodom and Gomorrah, says Duncan in Sinn Raun. Thanks, Duncan. Anyway, that's not all that we have on the agenda today. Your chance to win, with thanks to Goods of Kilkenny. And the latest iPad. Is it worth the money? I'll tell you what it can do. Good morning. Did you know 1 in 5 people have lied on their CV, or at least know somebody who has? The question is, did they get away with it? How serious an offence is it? Like, once you're in the job, once you've proven you can do it, surely there's no comeback. Also today, the average value of personal injury awards is down 38%. So you should be seeing a reduction in your insurance premium. Are you? Or is it as expensive as it ever was? And Tullamore Credit Union are here with your money questions answered. And whether it's mortgages and the impact of the ECB rates, whether you need to calculate what it's going to mean for you, are you better off fixing? Are you better off staying on a variable? Ultimately, do you give up that tracker if you've been lucky enough to enjoy one for the last decade or so? 083 3010 103 on text and WhatsApp for your question. Or come on air, ask it the old-fashioned way on 0818 300 103. Every single call, every contribution could be worth a brand new lingerie set, compliments of Goods of Kilkenny. And their free fitting service is second to none. And there's a big sale on this week as well. Now, it is front page news all over the country. I'll just reach for the Daily Star, for instance. You see Leo Varadkar, and the headline says, "Leo, I'm not going to hell for being gay." And this stems from initially a homily delivered by Father Sean Sheehy in Kerry at the weekend. And subsequently, he appeared on the local station there, Radio Kerry, and doubled down on his comments and suggested that gay politicians would absolutely go to hell if they did not repent. And he was critical as well of the liberalisation of laws in Ireland over recent years, and was very much defending his position as based on scripture and on the faith. Is he right? Even if you find those views offensive technically from a canon point of view, does he speak from solid ground? Well, Father Paddy Byrne is the parish priest in Abbey Leakes in Ballyrowan. Father Paddy, good morning.
Morning, Will, and good morning to all your listeners.
And people will remember, and it's fair to point out, your position on this would be very different. You've described in the past the nonsense, as you see it, where you can bless a tractor and you can't bless a happily in-love couple if they happen to be of the same sex. So do you see any basis for the comments at the weekend?
Well, I suppose the first thing is I found it, I'm sure many people who saw it on social media or listened to RT Radio 1 news yesterday, I just found it very unpalatable. I'm a firm believer in the little bit of wisdom I'm able to accumulate from the experiences, rich experiences of listening and loving humanity. And I believe in the gospel value, which is always that actions speak louder than words. And, you know, words are important, and how we communicate the love of God is very important. So I just thought, I'm speaking personally, upon reflection, that, you know, to have a rant on an altar in a sacred place where 30 people found the message and the rant so unpalatable that they walked out. And I think it has done a lot of, you know, a lot of destruction on parishes right across the country, and your listeners will know on the ground that what that individual, in a very abrupt, in a very arrogant, in a very disconnect from where most people are at in the humanity of our life and in our search for God's love, I think he did a lot of damage, because this parish and most parishes and my colleagues on the ground invariably, I would say, are kind, compassionate people who promote the questions of the values, should I say, of compassion, kindness and love. And to listen to somebody, to have the arrogance in 2022, equivocate people's way of life to being condemned to hell, I just personally would find that scary. I would find it totally disconnected from where I'm at in my relationship with the person of Jesus Christ, and from the wonderful experiences I've had with family members and parishioners who we all, as Pope Francis says, you know, who am I to judge and where go any of us in our earthly journey but to support and be kind and loving to one another. So it really was regrettable to hear the nonsense he came out with.
But does it expose a chasm in the church where there are those who share his view and will point to teaching that says homosexual acts are always violations of divine and natural law?
I think there is a sort of a fear I would have, Will. If you look over across the Atlantic to the United States, you have an extremely polarized Catholic Church. A very definite type of model of church, very much belonging to pre-Vatican II, where there was absolute certainty and where there was a very much sense of polarizing people. Some could come into the holy huddle, others were left outside. And I think there is an active model of church. It's called the Synodal Church by Pope Francis, who, whilst obvious, the fundamentals of our Christian faith for me is that Jesus Christ has risen from the dead, and in the month of the Holy Souls that does bring message of hope and consolation. The fundamental message for me, listening to the news bulletin and the program that you're going to detail today, is the cost of living crisis, is the injustice, inequality that's out there. And I think they're the issues that Jesus Christ would be very, very strong on. If we go down the road of the evangelical Trumpian right-wing, absolute Pharisaic model of church that can condemn, that can exclude, that can whip people off because of being a little different or not buying into necessity of what, you know, the people who feel the confines and rigidity of the law. And I just think theologically, Will, you know, we're actually in a good place. I believe culture, and I think this is also a fairly sound Catholic theology, that, you know, culture informs our faith, and also life in 2022 with the culture we live in is thankfully a very different one than most of your elderly listeners would remember, where often faith was shame-based, where there was a huge focus on what happened in the bedroom and not a mention on how we related to our neighbour, where women felt excluded, where women were demeaned. We know the history of the Catholic Church over the past few decades in its darkest sense, in that hurt that was inflicted on people because of the scandals and abuse, because of mother and baby homes, because of people internalizing a negative self-image. And I think the message of Jesus Christ for me is far more important than defending a sort of doctrine that excludes, that I don't think, and I mean this out of reflection and prayer, I don't think the good Lord, when I see him, will be asking me or any of your listeners anything much about what we are, who we are internally. But I don't think the one thing he will ask us is how well did we love and show kindness to one another. And in that regard, you know, to attack a public representative, naming public politicians, to attack young people, and we live in a world where young people, many of them are struggling. We live in a world where many people are hungry for the spiritual, for hope. There's a mental health crisis, there's a spiritual crisis. But to use that type of bold, arrogant, judgmental language, and the tone in which he screamed, to me, was a right turn off. And I'm grateful that most of my colleagues, the vast majority, many of them into their 80s and 90s, absolutely embody the compassion and kindness and love of Jesus Christ. And, you know, all are welcome at his table. And that's the beauty of Pope Francis' message. It's really disturbing some of the very right-wing extreme members of the Catholic Church that place far more emphasis on law as opposed to compassion, that would be far more preoccupied with what happens in terms of contraception or LGBT community in a judgmental way, but may not give a hoot about the problem of the immigration crisis, about poverty, about rolling up our sleeves and supporting one another in our vulnerability. And that's why, essentially, I follow the Lord and I'm a minister of the gospel, because I passionately believe in those values. And his values, what he promoted, was disturbing, hasn't a place, and fair play to the local bishop, he's ordinary, who not only has reprimanded him, but has no longer allowed him to use the altar or the ambo as a vehicle to preach hate.
It should be pointed out he spent many years in America, in the southern states. I believe Louisiana was where he spent much of his time, and perhaps is a product of that polarized thinking that you referred to earlier. But there are references in the Bible. Ezekiel, for instance, says Sodom committed abominable things. Jude 7 records that Sodom and Gomorrah acted immorally and indulged in unnatural lust. And we on one hand here, you cannot be an a la carte Catholic, that you must accept the teaching in its entirety. And yet the teaching sounds contradictory, because while you have that reference I've just given, elsewhere in the Bible it says, judge not, lest you be judged. It's a bit confusing.
God will, you're a scripture scholar now on top of everything else. Fair play. Yeah, that's the nature of a rich tradition that goes back not just to Christianity, but to essentially all belong to our father in faith, Abraham. And you're going back tens of thousands of years of experience of different culture, of patriarchy, of all the different elements that constituted humanity and people. So, of course, the scriptures refer to the culture of the day. And the narrative, essentially, though, is one of we are a people of light who have come out of darkness. We are a people of hope. You know, the word of God that I value, I'm about to celebrate a funeral of a well-known man in Leash, is on the cross. Who was the very first person that the good Lord said, today you will be with me in paradise? It was that man beside him on the cross. The Lord said, neither do I want to condemn you. The Lord said to those Pharisees who were all about sin, who wanted even to stone the woman when she was caught in a moment of vulnerability. And the Lord just said, let you who have not sinned throw the first stone. So I think as we as adults, and I appeal to the goodness of humanity for those listening, it's often, you know, in our brokenness, it's in our vulnerability where we learn the gifts of empathy, kindness and compassion. And I think that we have enough to do in our journey of life is to discover a sense of wholesomeness, which essentially is holiness, and in that integration to celebrate the gifts of kindness, of family, of friendship. And that's the type of assembly who gathers in church, in my vision, and hopefully that I and the vast, vast, vast majority of clergy, we welcome, we include, and we absolutely are delighted when we particularly welcome families, because we'll, to be frank about it, we are in a huge crisis when it comes to those who participate publicly around public worship. And I don't measure people's faith, whether they come to church on Sunday or not, but it is indicative of a society that has absolutely turned away in their multitude from traditional Catholicism. And much of what you named in the context of our conversation is the reason why. The Irish Church has recently engaged in every parish in the country in this national and global synod that Pope Francis has asked to listen to the needs of the faithful in our parishes. And it was as clear as day in every parish. People feel a disconnect from the traditional teachings of the church that caused a lot of pain and frustration and hurt and alienation to so many, particularly young people. People feel the role of women is greatly undervalued and absolutely necessary for fundamental change in terms of even how we conduct our services, how we engage with women at a leadership, or indeed in terms of ordination. I think the role of women is key to all of this as well. But I think going back to the beginning of our conversation, I'm delighted humbly this morning just to have a moment to be able to maybe put an alternative there, which is not just an alternative, it is the same gospel message that attracted people for two millennia and continues, that when I am down, God lifts me up. When I show love, I am being an instrument of God's love. And God loves us all, and love is love. And I think, you know, to turn an altar, a holy place where people find solace and comfort, into a place that causes division is a very, very sad reality. And what he's done, he has done a lot of harm to the message of the gospel, essentially.
One last question, and it's not from me, it's from Jerry, who says he is a gay man. He has practiced his religion as best he can, and he has asked for clarity as to whether he is a sinner or not. And he says no priest so far has told him that homosexuality is not a sin.
Now, again, I'm speaking impulsively here, but upon reflection upon this issue, Jerry, you're no more of a sinner than what I am or anyone else. And I think the language that we can define ourselves as sin or good or bad or right and wrong, I think ultimately the human journey in our sexuality, be you heterosexual, homosexual, whatever you are, it's about finding a place where I'm at home and at peace and where I find joy. And in that joy, to be able to share that with someone and with our community in a positive way. So I think the vast majority of people of God following Jesus Christ no way would condemn or call Jerry a sinner. And I really hope, Jerry, as a good man I'm sure you are, that your light and your love and your kindness will bring rich blessing to you and all who you encounter.
Father Paddy Byrne, thank you for your time.
God bless, Will. God bless to all your listeners.
He is the parish priest in Abileaks, Raheen and Ballinakil. Would you lie on your CV? Well, one in five people have, or at least know somebody who has. How serious an offence is it? Well, Gary O'Keefe is here from Cruet Resourcing. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
I suppose it depends on the degree of a lie. If you say you've qualifications and you don't, that's fairly serious. If you suggest you were maybe a few extra months in a job, you know, out of a misrecollection, they're hardly going to come down on you for that, are they?
No, and it's a very good question because I suppose whether we like it to admit it or not, everybody tells some sort of a lie every day and we don't even realise that that's natural. However, you're right that there are varying levels of seriousness. And firstly, lying on TV is a complete waste of time for both people anyway. But lying about having qualification on TV is definitely a no-no, and it is very serious. And, you know, nobody should ever push the boundary on that because it's just wrong. you talked about lying, you know, to say you were longer in a place than you were, also a no-no. I mean, you can't bend facts like that. What people get a bit creative with, I suppose, is about, you know, their level of talent or level of ability or whatever, and that's all subjective. However, it does bring in the question the validity of a CV in general. I mean, firstly, lying on any CV or any document like that, going into any employment, is an instant sackable offence, and that's going to be a black and white issue. But when we get CVs in and you read them, I have seen in the last 10 years that the validity of a normal CV or what we think it should be is actually called into question, and probably feeds into that whole thing of people thinking that they should bend it or it should look like this or that or the other.
What about internal claims? Let's say you put on your CV that you are the best salesperson in ABC company. How is any external interviewer going to know one way or the other whether you are?
Well, if you are claiming something like that, there's an opportunity for you. And this is what I mean about changing the, you know, what way a CV should tell you. In fact, what a CV is for is, first of all, to get you an interview, to get you in front of somebody. So claiming something that's going to be subjective really should give you an opportunity to back it up. I've been a very good salesperson because these are my results, and you should let them speak for themselves. Otherwise, you're into fiction. You're into kind of, you know, really waffle that doesn't help anybody. But be honest, you know, if the job is, if you're a salesperson and the job of the CV is to get you in front of the person, well, fair enough. I mean, it's your opinion that you're the best salesman in the place.
But yeah, but you could fabricate certain facts and figures to support your argument. I had a target of 20 grand a month. I never missed a target. Who's to know on the outside?
So let me be very clear. When you fabricate facts, that's absolutely going to come down crashing hard down the top of you, and it is a sackable offence.
I hear you, but how is the new employer to know? Because the old employer isn't necessarily going to hand over the financial information and say, oh, you know, Johnny there, he actually missed 10 targets last year.
Yeah, very good point. And in fact, this gets back again to the validity of the whole process. But again, like if you're checking a reference now, everybody has got to be so careful about, you know, what you say, whether it's subjective or not. What you can be factual about, though, is, you know, dates, whether targets were met or not. You don't have to disclose the facts. But if you ask the question, did this person meet all their sales targets, and we're using sales as an example, and the answer was no, well, that's a fact. And if you said that you did, and the answer is no, you didn't, well, then it's very easy to back that up.
But the challenge here is, let's say you're in your existing job now and you aspire to move to a new job, you're hardly going to put down your current boss as a reference.
Well, I would disagree. And normally what happens in a recruitment process is the first thing you should be able to do is say, yeah, you know, I'm able to stand over my employment here, and should I accept this offer, I will give you my current boss's reference, but only after, you know, we have agreed that you want to take me on. And that's one of the strongest things you can see from somebody, that they've absolutely no problem giving any references. And people really should think about that when they're moving, that if you're selling yourself to a prospective employer, that, you know, they need to have confidence in your ability to be able to do the job, your ability to be truthful about what you've done, and, you know, your own skills. So I can't think of any better way of doing that. You can call my boss and you can ask him. But after you've gone through the process.
Exactly, after you get the offer. Because if you don't get the offer and your boss receives that phone call, it could change the dynamic where you're working,
right?
And you're stuck with a bad atmosphere.
Well, that's right, and it can happen.
So if somebody lies and they're caught on a lie, is it necessarily a dismissible offence? Could it just result in a disciplinary? How, in your experience, do employers handle it?
Yeah. To be fair, in Ireland, we have very, very strong legislation that really protects an employee, and that's right. That's a good thing. I think there are 40 pieces of legislation that protects employees, which is a good thing. However, within everybody's contract, you know, there will be grounds for disciplinary action or dismissal, and depends on the incident, to be fair. You can, at the very, very least, expect that if you told a lie that really did affect your job. For example, if you claimed to be a plumber and you claimed to have a qualification to be the plumber, and that demanded, you know, a particular rate and a particular level of skill, and it turns out then very quickly that they didn't check or look for your document, but it became apparent that you weren't able to do the job, and then all of a sudden you may be dismissed or your rate adjusted, and you take your employer to a WRC tribunal and say, well, I'm sorry, but I did pay that person as a plumber because they told me they were. Can you please show me your documents? No, I can't. Well, then you lied and you're in a very bad position.
The caller has fessed up to something. 20 years ago, they said they had completed their leaving cert when they didn't. Mm-hmm. They applied to one of the well-known banks, secured the job. 20 years on, they've risen the ranks. Presumably, they're out of the woods now.
Well, again, I'm not a lawyer, but what I can tell you is what's practically highly unlikely is that that would be of any interest or relevance to somebody, particularly when somebody has been delivering a job for so long. But, you know, if you get into a court of law, you're dealing with what are facts and what aren't and what the law says. So I'm afraid that would have to be somebody better qualified than me in the law to decide whether they're okay or not. But common sense would prevail. Somebody's 20 years in the job, to be fair, they've more than likely, and I would say more than likely, not definitely, probably find themselves okay.
Yeah. Well, I think if they've retained them for that long, they've proven their ability to do the job. Otherwise, they would have been out the door in year one. And a final one, a few people have asked, do employers check references?
I give you a very, very honest answer on that now. And my answer is very clearly not enough.
Why not? Because it seems an obvious one.
It does. And really, I think in a labour market like what we're in at the moment, you can imagine employers are sometimes lucky to find a person, you know, that's qualified or willing to do the job because, you know, it is a job seeker's environment at the moment. I think it's down to bad practice and lack of discipline. I think that somebody, and I've done this myself, not checked enough on a reference. And there's two sides to it. I think maybe if you're under pressure as an employer, you don't do it enough, you have a good feeling about the person. I would always advise any employer that they should do it, and any employee that they should be not afraid for it to be done. And also, there is, I suppose, another side to that coin, where, you know, if you're given a reference on somebody now, you can more or less be assured that you have to stick to the facts. And if you have an opinion about somebody and it damages somebody's prospects to get that job, well, that could be challengeable if you had a vendetta against somebody and said, well, do you know what? Yeah, he was there from that time. She was there from that time to that time. But they were very rude. I didn't like them. That's an opinion. And I would say you should stick to the facts.
Mm, you could have a defamation case on your hands. Gary, always great talking with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Gary O'Keefe from Abbey Leaks. Cruet Resourcing is his company and sideline, by the way, if you're interested in his travels. One eye on the world. A huge breadth of opinion being offered about, well, two priests, actually. Father Paddy Byrne, who was with us in the last few minutes, and he offered his views on whether gay activity, marriage, whatever it is a sin. He was quite adamant that it's not, in his opinion, no more than any of the rest of us sinning. But the main ire, the main, I suppose, anger, that's not too light a word, anger from many listeners this morning is directed towards Kerry, to Father Sean Sheehy, to his remarks not alone on the altar at the weekend, but on Radio Kerry yesterday. So I'll get to your comments in a few minutes. Well, after years of rising prices, perhaps there is some relief on the way for hard-pressed insurance customers, because certainly the cost of claims is falling. The Personal Injuries Assessment Board has said the average value of awards is down 38% since new guidelines were introduced last year. One of those politicians advancing that change of law was Sean Fleming, the junior finance minister, and Leigh Shoffley, Fianna Fáil TD. Sean Fleming, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
Now, the obvious question is, if claims have fallen 38%, are premia down to the same extent?
Well, no, claims, the cost of the injuries, which is part of the total cost of your insurance policy, are down about 38% in terms of the cases dealt with by the Personal Injuries Awards Board. So everybody knows car insurance is down this year. It's down 10.5% in the last 12 months. So that clearly reflects a significant reduction this year, and there was a reduction last year as well. Just so your listeners will explain, or can I explain to your listeners, that 38% is just the awards part of the cost of the insurance. There's reinsurance and the cost of the insurance companies. So that doesn't translate into a 38% reduction in premiums, because every single penny on your insurance premium is not solely to cover the cost of the claims. There's other costs there as well. However, the important point is, we got new guidelines implemented by the judiciary last year. They've now started to work their way through the personal injuries guideline system, and they're seeing a 38% reduction. Now what has happened is some of the people are not happy getting a reduced settlement, and quite a lot of them have now moved on to the courts after that. So a number of them have been in the courts in recent times, and the judiciary are standing over the 38% reductions, but some of them are under, and there's test cases to the High Court. So inevitably, when you bring in a change like that, cutting awards that people would have been used to, it has a knock-on reduction in legal fees. There is a period of them being tested in the court after the government has done everything we can, and that's ongoing. Most of them coming right when they come out of the court. The PIAB, the Personal Injuries Awards System, was step one. Step two is the courts. Most of the cases are coming out right. But when we get the test cases completed and stood over by the judiciary, then we'll see the insurance companies even able to make more reductions over and above what's already happened in motor insurance.
Of course, the insurance market isn't homogenous anyway. Home insurance, for instance, is up 20% because the rebuilding cost of properties is up by about the same amount. So presumably this reflects more on motor policy. What about business and public liability insurance? Any decreases there?
No, the same figures apply, but the cases in businesses are much smaller. So the figures we have here are maybe about a third of the number of cases that would normally go through and that board for assessment. So they're a very good example of the cases that have gone through. But because of COVID, there was less activity. So many businesses were closed last year. There has been a reduction in the number of claims as well. So that's why the number of claims assessed by the Personal Injuries Board has actually gone down, and that's reflected in these figures. But the main point we've seen is a lot of people were rejecting these reduced awards and have the right to go to court. And we're now finding in the last 2 or 3 months, and I'm monitoring them on a monthly basis, the acceptance levels by the public of the reduced awards is now increasing, and they're not now contesting them. There was a period of 12 months people weren't happy, and it's just turning the corner now that people now are accepting the reduced awards, and there was a year when they weren't doing that. But now the courts generally are standing over these awards.
One other matter, Minister, which is related, the Criminal Justice Perjury and Related Offences Act was introduced last year.
Right.
There are still cases coming before the courts where people are found to have wantonly misleaded the court, and yet it doesn't seem that perjury is being pursued.
Okay, the first thing I will say is, for the first time ever, perjury in the court is now a criminal offence. So you're quite right. Any old cases before the legislation came in last year, and sometimes cases are in the courts for a couple of years, wouldn't be covered by the new legislation. But it's now a criminal offence, and the Gardaí are watching that on a case-by-case basis. What I will say, and it's important to say, people do often say that guy is perjuring himself, but he may or may not be. People use that word without it actually being an accurate reflection. I think exaggeration is the thing we have to watch most in the court. People exaggerate the award or their injuries, exaggerate the damage they suffered. And yes, there is perjury in some cases. And we now have one national system whereby the guards are doing it at a national level, checking all the results coming out of the course, because up to now it has been done on a Garda division by Garda division. So what was happening in the Midlands in terms of following up cases mightn't be done in the southeast or the Midwest or somewhere else. So we've now, forever, the first time, we have a situation where the guards have a national body to examine all these claims, which wasn't there 12 months ago.
Right. Well, Only 2 weeks ago there was a case where somebody had alleged loss of earnings after a crash and they weren't even in a job. That was an interesting one. Minister, thank you.
And I'm delighted it came out. The facts came out hopefully at the end. Okay.
Thank you very much, Minister Sean Fleming. He's the Minister of State at the Department of Finance and a Fianna Fáil TD in Laois Offaly. Now, your comments on the priest in Kerry, some excellent remarks, and not a unanimous one, by the way. Some very much in his defence today. So, all sides. Next. Regarding the priest in Kerry, Bernie says he should not be allowed to say Mass, and how dare he look down on people who are trying to get on with life. It doesn't matter what they do in the bedroom. Kate says Father Paddy Byrne, by contrast, was a tonic. He is God in spirit. With all the bad things that are being said and all the bad things going on in the world, please give him my blessings, she says. And another person echoing that, what a wonderful priest is Father Paddy. Declan, however, points out Catholic doctrine and most religious ideologies were manufactured in ancient times. Therefore, it should be straightforward to change it to include all of society. Anne, however, says the priest last Sunday in Kerry was correct in what he said. The problem today is that people do not want to hear the truth. He was basing his homily on the gospel, and as a priest, he is obliged to speak the truth. Chris echoes that. The priest speaks the truth. It says in the Bible that a man should not lie down with another man, and that goes for a woman as well. The government, and in particular Leo Varadkar, pushed their agenda on the public to please themselves. But freedom of speech is not against the law in Ireland. Margaret, however, says we've been brainwashed by the church for years. Jackie, as regards the priest in Kerry, says God made gay people, therefore he loves everybody and judges nobody. And let's go to WhatsApp. By the way, all of these qualify as potentially caller of the week. James says the way that priest was brought up, even in the priesthood, in training, in the commandments, it's hard to teach a new dog, an old dog, new tricks. And we know some of the elderly priests find it hard to keep their opinions to themselves. I'll call this out as I see it. John says, I wonder, Will, if that bollocks of a so-called priest would come out with a sermon condemning other priests, bishops, nuns who raped and abused children all over the world. I have my doubts, says John. Will, I am still none the wiser after listening to Father Paddy Byrne. So Father Paddy wasn't clear, according to Michael, on whether being gay is against the teaching of the church. From what I heard, he answered it like a politician. Another caller says, Father Paddy is a man I can listen to all day long. Makes so much sense. And when you hear him speak, you always go, ah, he sends light and love. Thank you. Religion in Ireland needs to move on. There are many multi-ethnicities in Ireland now. Times are changing very fast. Very few Catholics get up on a Sunday morning and go to Mass. Just look at the numbers. By the way, on a different note, a few people have contacted us to say that their insurance costs have been coming down. I presume motor insurance. Jerry, for instance, Morning Jerry in Ballinahown, your renewal came in yesterday and was €100 less than last year, which is great to see. And regarding the weather, Billy Morris says, I think the weather changes have been going on forever. I always remember warm summers, cold winters. Every 80 to 100 years, it seems to change around, he says. And another person points out, the Shannon has been flooding in the Midlands for at least 100 years. So how can this be climate change? I think the Shannon is a combination of things, isn't it? Yes, you may have climate change. You may also have the influence of Bordnamona and silt building up in the river and development along the Shannon. And so many things have influenced whether it floods or not. It's a complicated one, I agree. Well, I cannot understand why they don't use the flow of the River Shannon for hydropower, especially in the winter months. Any other progressive country would, says Stephen in Belmont. Well, Ardna Crusha is hydroelectric. So I don't know if there's room for a second one on the Shannon. And I don't think we've ever done a building project like that in the last 50 years. Next, on the priest, and this is by far the most aggravating topic of the day for many people, the priest in Wexford, Father Sheehy, who had suggested that Leo Varadkar, and indeed any other politician who was openly gay, would be going to hell because of their position. And Father Paddy Byrne from Abbey Leak has already condemned that view, as have many other listeners today. Some support for the priest, because if you go to the Old Testament, there are references to Sodom and Gomorrah, and it is sinful for one man to lie down with another and so on. Then again, different parts of the Gospel say, judge not, or you too shall be judged. Ruth Illingworth is Ireland's first openly gay mayor. She's a former member of the Mullingar Town Council. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
So when you hear a priest take to the altar and in very vitriolic terms express that view, what goes through your head?
Well, it's not very pleasant, but this guy is kind of an old-style fundamentalist. I understand he spent many, many years in the southern United States, so I think he probably absorbed a lot of the kind of pretty fundamentalist viewpoints that you would find in parts of the United States. In some ways, his statements kind of remind me of the time not so many decades back when bishops in Ireland would have Lenten pastorals attacking dancing as, you know, occasions of sin and putting your immortal soul at risk if you went to a dance. So he's clearly a very unpleasant sort of man, shall we say. I don't think there's much of a genuine Christian about him. And I sort of am glad that his bishop has kind of made it very clear he doesn't speak for his bishop. He doesn't really, I think, speak for most of his church.
It should be noted the bishop has apologised for hurt and offence caused by that homily. He points out that Father Sean Sheehy was only deputising in Listowel. He shall not be doing so again. He has asked the parish to take him off the roster of people who would deputise. Does that heal your feeling?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just, you know, it's, you know, one is kind of used to hearing viewpoints like that from religious believers of various faiths and denominations. It's, you know, there is quite a strain of virulent homophobia running through pretty much every kind of church and every kind of creed. So it's not totally surprising. I don't think, as I said, he speaks for his church, and the fair play to the people who got up and walked out of the church. It was a highly inappropriate setting anyway for what he was saying, given the number of families, children who were in the church. I clearly, obviously, don't agree with him. I don't believe that homosexuality is a sin. Never have, never bought. I know there were lots of gay people who tormented themselves for years because they actually believed they were sinners and they weren't. But it was very unpleasant. I mean, and my understanding that this man is a guy who gave a character reference for a rapist and shook hands with him, which I think tells you quite a lot about his particular moral standing.
Able to dismiss it then and write it off as a very minority rambling of a man who was in a very extreme location for many years? Or does it still have a sting?
It doesn't, really. It would have a sting if it was somebody, if a statement like that was made by, well, the Pope, obviously, or any other really quite senior clergyman. It possibly would. It would concern me. But this man is not, frankly, of any great significance and importance. He's an elderly gentleman who sort of, you know, he's as far as I'm concerned, he's perfectly entitled to believe that homosexuality is a sin. He's entitled to hold those views.
And you're perfectly entitled to disagree with him, yes.
Absolutely, yes. I think he's completely wrong. I think it's unpleasant, and I think a lot of people will have found it hurtful, particularly, you know, given, you know, what's happened in this country in this year. We had the terrible events up in Sligo back in the spring. We've had quite a number of other cases of attacks, gay, homophobic attacks on men and women around the country. And from that point of view, yeah, you know, sort of the hatred that's there, you know, it's always problematic when you realise out there that they are people who hate you. I mean, that is depressing, but I don't think, you know, he the fact that his bishop has taken the action he has, I don't think he speaks for his church. He's interpreted the scriptures his own way. It can be easily and absolutely interpreted different ways, as Father Byrne and many other clergy have, you know, that's and as the Pope has, you know. So it's unpleasant, but, you know, and I don't, you know, anymore, as I think Leo Varadkar said it, but, you know, that he doesn't believe he's going to hell because he's gay, and I don't either, and I don't think anybody else does. But there would have been people certainly in the recent past who did believe that, whose relationship with the Catholic Church or other churches was, you know, sort of damaged by the belief that they were sinners. And I think that was a terrible thing. And I think the church has moved away from that viewpoint. I hope it has. You know, they still apparently think that homosexual acts are sinful, which they are not. you know, any more than being left-handed is sinful. And there was a time, I think, some churches believed being left-handed was sinful. And, you know, as you can interpret,
there was certainly
the Bible
a time when it was penalised in classrooms anyway. I think that memory will have brought a shudder to many people.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing on Leviticus and man shall not lie with man, all that, but that comes from sections of Leviticus and others which also condemn wearing clothes of different materials. So, and mixing certain foodstuffs with other things. So it's, you know, you can interpret the Bible any way you want, and people do.
Ruth, grateful for your time. Thanks for the call.
Thanks very much, Will.
Ruth Illingworth from Mullingar. Maureen in Mount Melick feels the priest in Kerry is an ignorant man with very hurtful views. It was hate speech, and the days of Catholic rule is gone now. Most of us do not believe in God or religion anymore, she asserts. Hilda in Shinrone says scripture is based on ancient societies, master and servant, or slave even, is hardly a consensual relationship. And on email, Mary says, one of your texters said, Ireland is now a multicultural country and the Catholic Church should change its opinions. Well, the biggest growing religion in Ireland is Islam. How are they open to LGBT rights? Maybe your caller would like to be in Qatar or Saudi Arabia. Maybe I should invest in a burqa supplier, says Mary. Well, my view is that God created Adam, the first man, and then he created Eve, the first woman. He did not create another man for Adam or another woman for Eve. That is from Breda. Will, can I ask if the priest is breaking the law? Asks Tommy. I worked in the UK for 30 years for a large city council, and if I or any other employee made statements like Father Sean, we would be dismissed on the spot, maybe even taken to court. Well, Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, has acknowledged that we have free speech in Ireland, and he respects that Father Sean has that right to say what he said, but he disagrees with it. Still on the agenda today, poor sleep, not good for your eyes, it seems. And if you've financial questions, and who doesn't in this day and age, particularly around mortgages and the recent change in ECB rates, well, Finance Matters from 11:30 will get our experts to tackle some of those queries. Next, though, I see a very angry man looking at me. Why is he angry? We'll find out next. I think the angry man has disappeared, which is good. Let me tell you about our competition.
Sorry, Will. Sorry. Hang on a second. Sorry for interrupting your program.
Uh-oh. I know it's Angry Man's back.
I know it's unprofessional, even though you interrupt my program from time to time.
That's the voice of Roy Jennings of Drive Time.
Will, I'm shocked. I'm horrified. I'm disgusted. I'm pissed off. I'm angry.
You've been looking in the mirror again.
How could they?
Go on.
Those feckers at Mars.
Who? Mars?
Mars. How could they ban the bounty bars?
Oh, I like this. At last.
I mean, bounty bars.
At long
the taste of paradise. What's going on? I want you to do something on your program. I want to protest. I want your listeners' reaction. I want to find out why the hell bounty bars have been banned.
Stop. What's all this about?
Mars have says that they're going to remove the bounty bars from the celebration tin. It's not good enough.
From celebrations?
Yeah, as you know, I'm a huge bounty
They'll still be on the shelf.
What do you mean?
You can still buy them on the shelf. They're not going to be in the celebration tin.
Yeah, I know that. Because every Christmas, though, there's always tins of celebrations in the newsroom and everybody leaves the bounty bars behind and I always have a feast.
Okay, where did you read this?
It's all over the internet.
Okay, this one...
I mean, you didn't know about it?
Why does this annoy you so much?
Because I'm a big bounty fan.
Right. And you read the article yourself, did you?
Yeah. People have been texting me all morning, tagging me on Facebook. Roy, have you seen this?
Yeah. Did you also read that it's only in the UK?
No.
Oh, boy. The communards. Don't leave me this way. Roy Jennings getting his facts wrong. Interrupting. I'll try again to tell you about our competition this week, which is with thanks to...
Right, I'm angered. Oh, I'm upset.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Hang on.
Eventually I will get to tell you about the competition.
Roy Jennings was just in here.
Yes, this is the voice of Cameron Clark from the newsroom, by the way.
He made some blasphemous claims when he came in here. I'm out of breath. I came in that angered.
Right.
Bounty bars in the celebrations tub should not be in the tub anymore.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. Why?
Okay, they're the worst. They don't belong in there, okay? The celebrations tub is a little box of heaven. Okay, you've got your Milky Ways, you've got your Maltesers, which are, I would argue, the better part of the Malteser because they're closer to the teaser bar as opposed to the pack of Maltesers, so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've got your Mars. Bounties do not belong in there. Oh, they ruin the tub every single time. Now, when we were in the newsroom, we had a theory, and you've actually debunked my theory that it's only people under the age of 25 who don't like the bounties. Because when we were in there, it was only people over 25 that liked the bounties. But you have, thankfully, debunked my theory.
Are you finished?
A little bit.
You realise we're live?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to read the news now?
What time is it?
It's 5:30.
In another half an hour.
You should probably put the bulletin together.
Maybe.
Calm down. Relax. Yeah,
I need a cup of tea.
Yeah, okay. Can I read about the competition now?
Yes. I'm sorry. I shouldn't embarrass you.
Thanks, Cameron.
I was angered. I had to get my point across.
Okay.
Thanks,
Go away now. We'll get you some counselling.
Yeah.
Cheers. Bye. Anybody else want to come in? No. Go back. Our competition this week is with thanks to goods.ie. And you'll find them in Kilkenny. But if you can't travel to Kilkenny, they are online. And 80% of women are wearing the wrong bra size, which, along with not looking good, an ill-fitting bra can cause lots of problems such as back pain, indigestion, poor posture, and Goods just happen to have a free fitting service, second to none. And there's a big sale on this week. And caller of the week wins a lingerie set. We have €25 vouchers. There are lots of reasons to get involved on 083 30 10 103 text or WhatsApp, especially if you have a finance question, because the experts are next. Caroline Collins Murphy is here from Tullamore Credit Union, as is her colleague, the mortgage officer, Katrina Owens. And we're looking at different questions that have come in now. One person has an OnlyFans account, doesn't necessarily want to show over the bank statement. Well, look, you have to declare everything, you don't judge.
That's it.
Okay. Next. Is now a good time to fix? Okay, this is maybe not so much a credit union question, but a general finance principle.
I suppose I'll answer that by saying now's a good time to look at your mortgage with Tullamore Credit Union and do it the credit union way. Yeah. But yes, I would recommend that anybody who has a mortgage looks at their rate at the moment, whether they're variable or fixed. They may be just coming out of a fixed rate. They may have just, you know, built a house 5 years ago and just coming out. Now's the time, you know, to look at what the rates are there on the market, both fixed and variable, because can you afford an increase of, you know, anything from 40 euro a month on 100 grand mortgage to 180 a month on a 350,000 mortgage? You know, what's the impact going to be on your lifestyle going forward with bills rising? Are you going to be able to afford it? So yes, definitely, I would say now's the time for everybody to review their mortgage, whether they're variable or fixed.
Well, the ECB is trying to calm inflation. It's trying to take money out of the market. Clearly, that's not having the effect yet. Inflation is still at nearly 10%.
Exactly.
So there's definitely headroom. They could raise the base rate further. What if your partner is on a fixed term 2-year contract and you're looking for a joint mortgage together? So when they don't have that permanent job, what way do you look at it, Katrina?
Yeah, we still look at it. Yeah, we'd look at all cases, regardless of their fixed term or permanent. We actually had a case recently where someone was on a fixed term contract. We were still able to offer them a mortgage.
Okay.
Depending on their profession, if we see that they can still get a job in the long run, you know, with a different company or whatever, they would be able to.
Yeah, so if they're a software engineer,
for instance. Yeah, you'd know that they'll have a job regardless. They'll won't find a problem getting it.
All right. Next. So we're back to the query about the council house. And this person says their only income is social welfare. Presumably you need to meet a certain threshold of income, even if it's a low income. So generally speaking, somebody on social welfare, are they going to have enough means to buy out their house?
They may not. And that's been very honest. But I suppose I'd like a little bit more detail on the type of social welfare. They could be on family income supplement. There's various, I will say, social welfare payments that can be taken into consideration. There's others that can't. So if that individual wants to send us in an email, they can do it at info@tullamorecu.ie, and I'm happy to deal with their query directly because I need a little bit more information to be able to give them a solid answer.
Here's one. So a civil servant is going to be 60 next year. They have 11 years left on their tracker mortgage. But again, they're not confident in the tracker because the only direction is up with the ECB. But since they're going to be retired in a few years, what attitude would you take when reviewing their application?
So a mortgage in the credit union, you can get it until the age of 70.
Yeah.
So they would have 10 years available with Tullamore Credit Union.
Okay. So and the fact that they may not have the same level of income in 5 years' time, how does that have a bearing?
Well, they're going to have, if they're a civil servant, they're going to have a pension kicking in. So you would look at what the balance of the mortgage is going to be in 5 years' time versus the term they have remaining and the income they'd have at that point in time.
Okay, so depending on the numbers involved, it's possibly a yes.
Exactly.
Now, another caller is asking about calculators. So if you're trying to work out affordability and whether it's within your price range and you don't necessarily want to go through the whole rigmarole of the meeting, can you make an online tool available?
Yeah, there is one on our website. So www.tullamorecu.ie. There is a loan calculator on that for all of our loans, not just our mortgages.
And just a little easy tip, I suppose, from the credit union is 100,000 euro of a mortgage would work out at a repayment about 540 a month. So it's 5.40 euro per thousand. So if you're looking at a house that's 185,000 in Tullamore, multiply the 540 by 185, and that'll give you an idea of what your mortgage repayment would be per month.
You need strong coffee to do that. God bless your maths. Now, our next caller says they have a balance outstanding on their existing mortgage of 45,000 euro. And they're wondering, can they just take out a regular unsecured loan with the credit union, clear the balance with their own provider? What attitude would you take there?
So they're looking at taking out the mortgage from...
So they have an existing mortgage, different institution, doesn't say which one. They want a loan from you to clear that, but unsecured.
Okay. So the only unsecured we have would be unsecured home improvement loan. So it wouldn't fall into that category.
Right.
We would look at, you know, if they wanted to switch their mortgage across to ourselves, we would certainly look at that. And I know some people are put off. They think, oh, there's a lot of legal expense in that. But the fact is the charge is already registered against the property. So the legal bill isn't that high if you wanted to do a switch.
All right. Our next listener, can we just veer away from mortgages just for a few minutes? Car. So looking to make the jump to an electric car, but the outlay is greater. Wondering what sort of rate I can get on from the credit union versus PCP. Don't like the idea of not owning the car outright. Yeah, PCP, the manufacturer's offer, basically you're financing the depreciation rather than the actual car. So what sort of rate on a car loan?
So, Trini, correct me if I'm wrong, 6.9 is the car rate at the moment. Again, that website I said earlier, that the Competition and Consumer Protection is a really good website. You can do all comparisons, so ccpc.ie, you can do your mortgages, your car loans. But the electric car, I suppose, is a little bit more expensive. Again, we've done a number of electric cars. Sometimes we would increase the term on the electric car to make the payment more manageable because it's more long-term sustainability as well.
What tends to be the term of a car loan?
5 years normally, But we have
extended
the term, especially for the electric,
The selling point of the electric, among others, is that it'll last longer.
Exactly.
If you're removing parts, and might be a longer-term investment, all right. Back to your home loan, actually. So a couple of people are asking about insulation, solar panels, loans of that nature. What covers that?
Yeah, well, I suppose it depends. Are they building? Are they doing a complete retrofit on the property? Are they doing a small retrofit where maybe they're just doing their windows, doors, or they're changing their heating system? So there's different avenues they can go down. They can certainly look at the home loan option, depending on the spend, or they could look at a pro-energy loan with the credit union. Pro-energy is actually quite a good one, I have to be honest, because we partner up with REIL and they send the surveyor out and they do a full costing, if you like, that if you're going to do change your windows and doors and your heating system, they'll look at what cost saving is going to be there for you. Or if you were only planning on doing one item, like solar panels, they'll show you how cost effective it's going to be, or if you added a second option, what benefit that would be for you.
And how forensic is the paperwork if you're doing a home improvement loan? Do you need to supply all the bank statements and everything that's required in a mortgage?
I suppose depending on the amount that you're going for, the paperwork would be a little bit less for your unsecured home improvement loan. We do like people to get their quotes when they're doing their home improvements and shop around, make sure they're getting the best value. And that's really it.
Yeah.
Trina, on that one,
yeah, there's not much extras or anything for an improvement loan, no.
Back to mortgages. Caller says they're presently with a vulture fund. Well, how do they get released and over to you guys? Is it like moving from a bank or is it a more complicated process?
So literally they phone up and just see what the settlement figure is, the full and final settlement figure is. They'll need to have that figure so that they know what they're working with. Are they working with 100,000 that they need a mortgage from ourselves from the 100,000? But it's very similar to you switching from KBC or Ulster Bank to the credit union. You're looking at what's the figure that you need to remortgage or switch as such, and we work out the repayments on that. And again, Katrina, look at the paperwork, make sure the affordability is there. Very similar to your standard mortgage.
Yeah.
Okay. Next caller says they're not in your area, but they're living somewhere and the house is still in negative equity. What views do credit unions take on a property where the amount drawn down exceeds the value of the home?
I think, you know, with credit unions and banks alike, you're going to find it difficult because you do have, I suppose, thresholds you have to adhere to with central bank regulation. Like for the first time buyer, it has to be 90%. With your second hand, it's 85%. And I know they're bringing that up to 90% in January. But we have to make sure that it falls within that remit.
All right. So presumably keep paying on the existing loan until you are in positive equity?
Until you're in positive. When's the last time they had a valuation done on the property? You know, like if you look at the increase in the property market over the last 12 months, even some areas, properties increased by anything from 11 to 17%. So they may not be in that negative equity space have it valued or have, you know, a drive-by valuation. I know some of the auctioneers will do, depending on the area, which is a little bit more cost-effective.
All right. Guys, we're out of time already and many questions we haven't gotten around to. So if anybody wants to continue the conversation, how can you be reached?
They can reach Katrina on 057-93-51780. Or, as I said, if there are any queries, we're happy to take them by email, info@tullamorecu.ie. And just put your phone number on it and we'll call you back directly if you want to speak in person or if you want to come into the office. There's no problem.
I'm going to make an appointment with myself.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Guys, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bounty all the way, says Sharon in Tullamore. Niall O'Keefe agrees. How many people are wrong today? It's amazing. Ronan, I got your voicemail, but unfortunately didn't download, so I can't play it. But I'm sure you were very nice and complimentary in everything you said. Caroline in Athlone agrees with Roy Jennings. Leave the bounty alone. Get rid of the Snickers from the pack of celebrations. Dave says bounties were my favourite and I eat them only at Christmas. And yeah, this lady on the money pointing out they're only banned in the UK, not in Ireland. That's the problem when you just read a headline and you don't read the full story. Fintan, back to the priest in Kerry, says the Bible is nothing more than a storybook made of various fictions to suit a bunch of, well, we won't even say that word, in frocks trying to rule the world. If God made Adam and Eve, well, surely the whole human race is therefore interbred. Yeah, reasonable point, I suppose, when you consider if he took it literally, then yes. Let's not go there. Let's not even contemplate that. Caller of the day, winning €25 to spend at our good friends of Goods in Kilkenny, goods.ie, and they have a massive sale on lingerie and nightwear this week. A lady who is, for over 25 years, enjoying bounty bars. And is there a name, Sinead? No! No, the invisible lady has won €25. Thanks very much for picking caller of the day, Sinead, with the name on it. Now, if I'm not back tomorrow, it means she has killed me.